Up next on KNKX is a story from our show Sound Effect. I'll turn it over to Sound Effect host Jennifer Wang.
Today, our show is about time. All of our lives are ruled by time, but some are more aware of it than others. At the Northwest Kidney Center in Seattle's First Hill neighborhood, dialysis patients are very aware of the passing hours. It's right on the screen of the machine that they're hooked up to, a machine that filters and cleans their blood, a job normally done by healthy kidneys.
We're in hour one. So I start at 5:30 to 10. And we have to be here half hour ahead in order to do the prep. And it depends on our blood pressure, whether we get on. And so today was okay. Yeah.
That's Seattle native Vanita McGee. She's in a big reclining chair covered by a gray blanket. She comes to the Northwest Kidney Center for dialysis 3 days a week for 4.5 hours at a time. Vanita's been in dialysis for 6 years because of end-stage renal failure. And from her chair, Vanita looks over at a row of other patients, maybe a dozen or so people quietly sitting in the same reclining chairs next to their own humming and beeping machines. They all come here for hours at a time, several days a week, just to stay alive. But back in 2011, when Vanita's kidneys first stopped working, she didn't want this to be her life.
You know, they sent me to education, and my only question to them was, you know, well, what happens if you don't do it? And then finally they said, you die. And I said, oh, it don't seem that bad.
Death doesn't seem that bad.
Or... yeah. And so I decided not to go through this because I live my life and most of my people are gone.
But Vanita's friends convinced her to give it a try. The first 2 years were rough. She still worked full-time in social services. Today, she's on disability. The first time Vanita came to the dialysis center, she found it terribly depressing.
When I describe it, I say it's like a morgue, but we're not dead yet, you know? And my friends would come and they would, you know, check it out. So they were making sure that I got there, and so I had company. You know, I have my friends Stella and Mike. They come up once a week and we play cards. But I noticed a lot of people would just be like in their own private hells. So eventually what happened is like, you know, I was angry. I was mad. I didn't want to do this. You know, and I was having a hard time adjusting. And I said, well, I guess, you know, you can just suck on lemons or you can make lemonade out of lemons. So what I started to do is I started walking down the line after I got off, and I'd start saying hello to everybody. Just say, you know, hi, how are you doing? Have a good run.
Have a good run.
Yeah, they call our treatments runs. And it started off, the very first time it really started off was there was a woman on the second floor, and that's the very sick floor. And I was placed on there because of time. You know, because I worked so late, they shut down this floor early, so they moved me to the really, really severely sick floor. And she was in an isolation room, like one of these. These used to be isolation rooms. And she would always wail and cry, and, you know, and it had a hard time calming her down. So I went in there, and I sat next to her, and I said my name, and I held her hand, and she stopped. She wanted some type of outreach, some type of human kindness, some type of touch. It got to be that I would kind of assist the second floor, because when she got out of control, I just go and sit and talk to her. And what I noticed sometimes is that people would tear up, or they would say thank you, or they would liven up, you know. Then when I got to this floor, I just started doing the little rounds and stuff. And I know that it helped me, because instead of me being focused on just going through this stuff, you know, I felt like I was sharing with another person, another human being. And then as I wound up and people started talking to me, they all have fascinating stories.
What are some of the stories you've heard here?
Well, one person, he just passed away. His whole family had congenital kidney disease. And so all his people that were blood related, They all died. And he knew he was dying. And I knew he was dying. But we lived every day. And one of his phrases was, well, we made it through another one, you know. Even when he went over to the other center, he went, there's a whole bunch of centers around here. You know, I go and see him. He come and see me. He always give me all the political magazines. You know, and I just asked him one promise, is that when he pass, to please get word back to me. Because when people here pass, because of the HIPAA laws, we don't know. We don't see him anymore. And so about 2 weeks ago, he got word to me before he died that he was going. We've built such a community that if one of us is not there in that chair, no matter if they don't know about HIPAA, they're asking, you know. And one good thing is that, you know, I've built some relationships here that we have each other's phone numbers and we talk outside of here. It's a lot different at this center than some other centers I've been to.
And you're responsible for that change in culture.
Well, I kind of pushed it along. You know, in 2011, on my birthday, I asked the nutritionist if I can give out sugar-free popsicles. And she said, yeah. And so I just started giving out sugar-free popsicles, and I gave a little party favors, which were little games from the dollar store. And it was a game that you had to have somebody else to play, you know? I mean, most people here, they want to get through this treatment and go home. And I don't blame them, you know? But now, you know, people, like I said, they step out beyond themselves. They laugh, they talk, they cry. And that's why it feels more like community.
Do you remember the moment when you realized, hey, I actually have created a community here?
I don't know when the moment is. It's just that it kind of just grew. Like Mrs. McClendon, coming to find out she likes opera and she likes classical music. So I found a way to get really cheap disability tickets. And then we, you know, dressed up and we went to opera. And we enjoy the concert and feel just like normal people, you know? And I know when it's community, when people want to do something out of this setting, you know? And my friend Laura, she's Mexican, right? And so when I first met her, I said hello, and she said, hola. And then she said, no, habla es inglés or whatever. I said, that's okay. I'll just come by, right? And so I think I kind of wore her down finally. She started talking English. Come to find out, she's a translator. I said, were you pulling my leg back then? You know, but she didn't know who I was. And she, you know, she ran in game, you know.
The people you've made friends with here, would you have gotten to know them outside of this place, do you think?
Actually, no. Mainly because the ages are different. Our lifestyles are different. You know, we're all here by happenstance. I feel, though, that I'm very fortunate in terms of this because, like I said, like I didn't want to do it. My friends cared enough about me to invest in me. They've been with me ever since. I have one friend, I call him Groucho because he looks like Groucho Marx. And every year he says, thank you for giving me one more year of life with you. I mean, I get emotional even thinking about it. And we're going up to 6 years now.
So how much time is left in your session now?
Well, till 10 o'clock. So we got about, 3 hours? It should tell you right there.
Remaining 2:48, 2 hours and 48 minutes.
Right.
Vanita and some of her fellow dialysis patients, friends she's made at the center, are planning to write a cookbook later this year for people with renal failure. Their diets can be pretty intense. And Vanita is also working to lose some weight so that she can get on the list for a kidney transplant.